everybody. This is Osho Radio. We have a new program for you, full of wonderful music and a part of a discourse by Osho. Just enjoy this 1 hour for yourself and let it be your meditation.
Silent the night, I'm alone. Silence inside, I am so happy. Everything is as it should be. Feels so good, I'm at home. Winds of the night from the sea bring smells of the spring, so exciting.
The discourse today is from the series The Diamond Sutra, number 1. Osho is talking about the Buddha, Gautama the Buddha, and how he was the first man who created a religionless religion. All the religions up to then, and even in the world today, are repressive religions that have a certain ideology. For Buddha, there are no ideals. No future exists.
Thank you. I love Gautam the Buddha because he represents to me the essential core of religion. He is not the founder of Buddhism. Buddhism is a byproduct. But he is the beginner of a totally different kind of religion in the world. He is the founder of a religionless religion. He has propounded not religion but religiousness. And this is a great radical change in the history of human consciousness. Before Buddha, there were religions, but never a pure religiousness. Man was not yet mature. With Buddha, humanity enters into a mature age. All human beings have not yet entered into that, that's true. But Buddha has heralded the path. Buddha has opened the gateless gate. It takes time for human being to understand such a deep message. Buddha's message is the deepest ever. Nobody has done the work that Buddha has done, the way he has done. Nobody represents pure fragrance. Other founders of religions, other enlightened people have compromised with their ideals. Buddha remains uncompromised. Hence his purity. He does not care what you can understand. He cares only what the truth is. And he says it without being worried whether you understand it or not. In a way, this looks harsh. In another way, this is great compassion. Truth has to be said as it is. The moment you compromise, the moment you bring truth to the ordinary level of human consciousness, it loses its soul. It becomes superficial. It becomes a dead thing. You cannot bring truth to the level of human beings. Human beings have to be led to the level of truth. That is Buddha's great work. 25 centuries before, just someday, early morning, just like this day, 1,250 monks were present. It happened in the city of Sravasti. It was a great city of those days. The word Sravasti means the city of glory. It was one of the glorious cities of ancient India. It had 900,000 families in it. Now, that city has completely disappeared. A very, very small village exists. You will not find even its name on any map. Even the name has disappeared. Now it is called Sahit Mahit. It is impossible to believe that such a great city had existed there. This is the way of life. Things go on changing. Cities turn into cemeteries. Cemeteries turn into cities. Life is a flux. Buddha must have loved this city of Sravasti, because out of 45 years of his ministry, he stayed in Sravasti 25 years. He must have loved the people. The people must have been of a very evolved consciousness. Gautam the Buddha has taught a spirituality that is non-repressive and non-ideological. That is a very rare phenomenon. The ordinary kind of spirituality, the garden variety, is very repressive. It depends on repression. It does not transform man. It only cripples man. It does not liberate man. It enslaves man. It is oppressive. It is ugly. Remember this, Buddha is non-repressive. And if you find Buddhist monks to be repressive, remember, they have not understood Buddha at all. They have brought their own pathology into his teachings. And Buddha is non-ideological. He gives no ideology, because all ideologies are of the mind. And if ideologies are of the mind, they cannot take you beyond the mind. No ideology can become a bridge to reach beyond the mind. All ideologies have to be dropped. Only then the mind will be dropped. Buddha believes in no ideals either, because all ideals create tension and conflict in man. They divide. They create anguish. You are one thing and they want you to be something else. Between these two, you are stretched, torn apart. Ideals create misery. Ideals create schizophrenia. The more ideals there are, the more people will be schizophrenic. They will be split. Only a non-ideological consciousness can avoid being split. And if you are split, how you can be happy? How you can be silent? How can you know anything of peace, of stillness? The ideological person is continuously fighting with himself. Each moment there is conflict. He lives in conflict. He lives in confusion. Because he cannot decide who really he is, the ideal or the reality. He cannot trust himself. He becomes afraid of himself. He loses confidence. And once a man loses confidence, he loses all glory. Then he is ready to become a slave to anybody, to any priest, to any politician. Then he is just ready, waiting to fall in some trap. Why people become followers? Why people are trapped? Why people fall for a Joseph Stalin or a Adolf Hitler or a Mao Zedong? Why in the first place? They have become so shaky, the ideological confusion has shaken them from their very roots. Now they cannot stand on their own. They want somebody to lean to. They cannot move on their own. They don't know who they are. They need somebody to tell them that you are this or that. They need an identity to be given to them. They have forgotten their self and their nature. Adolf Hitler's and Joseph Stalin's and Mao Zedong's will be coming again and again until and unless man drops all ideologies. And remember, when I say all ideologies, I mean all ideologies. I don't make any distinction between noble ideologies and not so noble. All ideologies are dangerous. In fact, the noble ideologies are more dangerous. Because they have more seductive power. They are more persuasive. But ideology as such is a disease, exactly a disease, because you become two, the ideal and you. And the you that you are is condemned, and the you that you are not is praised. Now you are getting into trouble. Now sooner or later you will be neurotic, psychotic or something. Buddha has given a non-repressive way of life and non-ideological too. That's why he does not talk about God. He does not talk about heaven. He does not talk about any future. He does not give you anything to hold. He takes everything away from you. He takes even yourself. He goes on taking things away. And finally he takes even the idea of self, I, ego. He leaves only pure emptiness behind. And this is very difficult. This is very difficult because we have completely forgotten how to give. We only know how to take. We go on taking everything. I take the exam, and I take the wife, and I take even the afternoon nap. You go on taking. Even afternoon nap, you take a thing which cannot be taken. You have to surrender to it. Sleep comes only when you surrender. Even a wife, a husband, you go on taking. You are not respectful. The wife is not a property. You can take a house. How can you take a wife or a husband? But our language shows our mind. We don't know how to give. How to give in. How to let go. How let things happen. Buddha takes all ideals away. The whole future away. And finally, he takes the last thing that is very, very difficult for us to give. He takes your very self, leaves a pure, innocent, virgin emptiness behind. That virgin emptiness he calls nirvana. Nirvana is not a goal. It is just your emptiness, when you have dropped all that you have accumulated, when you don't hoard any more, when you are no more a miser and a clinger, then suddenly that emptiness erupts. It has always been there. Hakun is right. From the very beginning, all beings are Buddhas. That emptiness is there. You have accumulated junk, so that emptiness is not visible. It is just like in your house, you can go on accumulating things. Then you stop seeing any space. Then there is no more space. A day comes, even to move in the house becomes difficult. To live becomes difficult because there is no space. But space has not gone anywhere. Think of it. Meditate over it. The space has not gone anywhere. You have accumulated too much furniture in the TV and the radio and the radiogram and the piano and everything. But the space has not gone anywhere. Remove the furniture out and the space is there. It has always been there. It was hidden by the furniture, but it was not destroyed. It has not left the room, not for a single moment. So is your inner emptiness, your nirvana, your nothingness. Buddha does not give you nirvana as an ideal. Buddha liberates instead of coercing. Buddha teaches you how to live, not for any goal, not to achieve anything, but to be blissful here now. How to live in awareness. Not that awareness is going to give you something. Awareness is not a means to anything. It is the end in itself, the means and the end both. Its value is intrinsic. Buddha does not teach you otherworldliness. This has to be understood. People are worldly. The priests go on teaching the other world. The other world is also not very otherworldly. It cannot be. Because it is just an improved model of the same world. From where you can create the other world, you know only this world. You can improve, you can decorate the other world better. You can remove few things that are ugly here and you can replace few things which you think will be beautiful. But it is going to be a creation out of the experience of this world. So your other world is not very different. Cannot be. It is a continuity. It comes out of your mind. It is a game of imagination. You will have beautiful women there. Of course, more beautiful than you have here. You will have the same kinds of pleasures there. Maybe more permanent, stable. But they will be the same kind of pleasures. You will have better food, more tasty, but you will have food. You will have houses, maybe made of gold, but there will be houses. You will repeat the whole thing again. Just go into the scriptures and see how they depict the heaven, and you will find the same world improved upon. Few touches here and few touches there. But it is not in any way otherworldly. That's why I say the otherworldliness of other religions is not much otherworldly. It is this world projected in the future. It is born out of the experience of this world. There will not be misery and poverty and illness and paralysis and blindness and deafness. Things that you don't like here will not be there, and things that you like will be here and in abundance. But it is not going to be anything new. Mind cannot conceive of anything new. Mind is incapable of conceiving the new. Mind lives in the old. Mind is the old. The new never happens through the mind. The new happens only when mind is not functioning. When mind is not controlling you. When mind has been put aside. The new happens only when the mind is not interfering. But all your scriptures talk about the heaven. And the heaven, or the paradise, or Firdaus, or Swarga, is nothing. But the same story may be printed on a better art paper, with better ink, in a more improved press, with more colorful illustrations. But the story is the same. It cannot be otherwise. Buddha does not talk of other worldliness or the other world. He simply teaches you how to be here in this world, how to be here alert, conscious, mindful, so that nothing impinges upon your emptiness, so that your inner emptiness is not culminated, poisoned, so that you can live here and yet remain uncontaminated, unpolluted, so that you can be in the world and the world will not be in you. The otherworldly spirituality is bound to be oppressive, destructive, sadomasochistic, in short, pathological. Buddha's spirituality has a different flavor to it. The flavor of no ideal. The flavor of no future. The flavor of no other world. It is a flower here and now. It asks for nothing. All is already given. It simply becomes more alert so you can see more, you can hear more, you can be more. Remember, you are only in the same proportion as you are conscious. If you want to be more conscious. Consciousness imparts being. Unconsciousness takes being away. When you are drunk, you lose being. When you are fast asleep, you lose being. Have you not watched it? When you are alert, you have a different quality. You are centered, rooted. When you are alert, you feel the solidity of your being. It is almost tangible. When you are unconscious, just dragging by, sleepy, your sense of being is less. It is always in the same proportion as the consciousness is. So Buddha's whole message is to be conscious. And for no other reason, just for the sake of being conscious, because consciousness imparts being. Consciousness creates you. And you so different from you that you are, that you cannot imagine. A you where I has disappeared, where no idea of self exists, nothing defines you. A pure emptiness, an infinity, unbounded emptiness. This Buddha calls the state of meditation Samma Samadhi, right state of meditation, when you are all alone. But remember, aloneness is not loneliness. Have you ever thought about this beautiful word, alone? It means all one. It is made of two words, all and one. In aloneness, you become one with the all. Aloneness has nothing of the loneliness in it. You are not lonely when you are alone. You are alone but not lonely. Because you are one with the all, how you can be lonely? You don't miss others, true. Not that you have forgotten them. Not that you don't need them. Not that you don't care about them. No. You don't remember others because you are one with them. All the distinction between one and all is lost. One has become the all and all has become one. This English word alone is immensely beautiful. Buddha says Samma Samadhi is aloneness. The right meditation is to be so utterly alone that you are one with all. Let me explain it to you. If you are empty, your boundaries disappear. Because emptiness can have no boundaries. Emptiness can only be infinite. Emptiness cannot have any weight. Emptiness cannot have any color. Emptiness cannot have any name. Emptiness cannot have any form. When you are empty, how you will divide yourself from others? Because you don't have any color, you don't have any name, you don't have any form, you don't have any boundaries. How you are going to make any distinctions? When you are empty, you are one with all. You have melted into existence. Existence has merged with you. You are no more an island. You have become the vast continent of being. Buddha's whole message is condensed in this one word, Samma Samadhi, right meditation. What is right meditation and what is wrong meditation? If the meditator exists, then it is wrong meditation. If the meditator is lost in meditation, then it is right meditation. Right meditation brings you to emptiness and aloneness. This is his basic gift to the world.
You have been listening to a one-hour program of Osho Radio. Also on our website you can listen to earlier programs. Just visit oshoradio.net. The instrumental music you heard today was from the CD Fragrance of the Rose, music from the world of Osho from Pune too. We had a very special song by Saman which was called Mystery. Before the discourse, you heard Kyronesh and Anugama with a composition called Wu Wei from their CD Sounds of the Heart. After the discourse, there was Vedant Anando, When the Morning Comes, from his CD Adina. And we're going to finish with a celebration song called I'm Touched by Your Beauty from the CD Songs of Awakening. And it's being sung by Neera and Milarepa. Goodbye, everybody. Come back to Osho Radio next time. Tell your friends about us. Have a good time. Take care. And namaste to you all.
I am touched by your beauty. I am touched by your silence. I am touched by your beauty. I am touched by your silence.
Thank you.